Hi, ladies and gentlemen.
Welcome to Pop Culture Man Children, PC, MC.
We
put the chill in Pop Culture Man Children.
You've been waiting to say that for a while.
Hi-yo!
For more information on who we are and what we do, please go to the Instagram, Pop Culture Man Children. You can see Mike post pictures of just sugar.
I enjoy what I imagine you're referring to is Waffle Friday. Every Friday I go out for waffles with a good friend of mine, Jen. We go to Beans and Leaves on Staten Island, and we get gourmet waffles.
Mike, I don't think that they're gourmet.
They're wonderful.
I don't even consider that a breakfast.
I don't have it for breakfast. I usually have it for like lunch.
I think it's more of a dessert.
I believe in Belgium, they actually eat it as a dessert.
And what I see is just disgusting amounts of just shit thrown on it. It's like, hey, let me add, I don't know, Cocoa Pebbles.
Yes, yes.
So I'll add Cocoa Pebbles.
You're absolutely right.
Oh, you know what I want to? I'll add peanut butter.
Yes, you're absolutely right.
Oh, you know what? Then let's
Although
top
those
it
two
off.
Flavor profiles, I don't think.
Let's top it off with just a mountain of whipped cream
mm-hmm.
drizzled with caramel.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Well, you can do that. You can pick your own things. But I like to go from the menu, the pre-created things.
Mm-hmm.
Last time I was there, I had a Fruity Pebbles treat waffle. And the treat means it's like a, what do you call it? Like a Rice Krispie treat. So it was a waffle. On top of the waffle was a nice layer of like fluff, like that marshmallow shit. To give it the treat flavor, and then some Fruity Pebbles, some whipped cream, and some sweetened milk.
You're better than this.
Why?
You're better than this. Mike, that's diabetes, bro.
Once a week, my friend. Listen, I understand that your whole OCD thing is that you can only eat carrots or whatever the fuck you eat, but
I
enjoy
want really good
life.
Eyesight.
I enjoy life.
Like a hawk.
With both hands, you understand me?
Yes, you do.
There are days where, you know, I eat very healthy. There are days when I have something healthy in the morning and then a waffle at night. Life is too short to not have a waffle once a week. If I gave you the waffle, you'd have a panic attack and cry and write a diary entry about it.
Oh, I couldn't do it.
And be like, I can't do it, blah, blah, blah.
No,
no one will love me if I eat this.
No.
You've got a whole thing going on there.
Several nights ago, I went out to a diner with some friends and they were all eating these big,
You mean they were enjoying life?
Yeah, they were just eating these big, disgusting meals. And when my order came, they just looked at me and they're like, what is this? And I go, oh, it is a blueberry muffin with a cup of green tea.
So sad. So sad. Do you think when you finally do die, one of the last thoughts you're going to have is, oh, I'm so glad I didn't have waffles. Boy, did I do this thing right, huh?
Well, I've also started drinking chlorophyll.
I'm sorry, what?
Yeah, I started drinking chlorophyll. You know
Isn't
how
that what you use to knock somebody out in
no,
a movie?
No, that's chloroform.
Oh.
Chlorophyll is the stuff inside plants.
More like borophyll. That's a Billy Madison reference. What are you trying to do?
I want to be Swamp Thing.
It's what I think you're doing. What's happening? What's happening, man? What happened to you?
I'm chasing immortality, man.
Is that it? Fear of death?
Yeah, Dorian Gray, man. That's what I'm trying to be.
But, you could get hit by a truck tomorrow.
I try to avoid crossing the street at all cost.
Okay. I cross streets. I eat waffles. I'm living out loud, man. I'm eating waffles like nobody cares. I'm dancing like the world can't see.
Just a couple of drops of some green liquid into my bottle of water, and I can feel its just natural properties fixing the insides.
Yeah.
You have to clean the insides like you wash your ass.
You're about one step away from, like, being one of those insane people that, like, swallows string and then waits for the string to come all the way out because you feel like it's gone all the way through. You're like very close to a cult. I feel like if a cult leader came up to you and, like, started talking to you about, like, chard and lentils, you would totally join.
I wouldn't do that.
This has been a step forward for me in terms of mental health because I used to be very obsessive about my body. And my therapist was like, instead of putting all this energy into hating yourself all the time, why not just be like, whatever.
Eat the waffle.
Yeah, eat the fucking waffle. Okay. And you know what? I like my dad bod. It's nice. It works for me.
Listen, you're a fucking babe.
I'm a snack.
You really?
No, not... you're the whole meal, Pop.
Thank you so much.
Right. Get it right.
I set you up for that.
Yes, you did. I walked right into that one.
So, but you know, that's what makes us a good odd couple.
Oh, yes.
I'm eating whipped cream, you're cutting little beets into little red things.
That was my dinner a couple nights ago, actually.
Disgusting. Disgusting.
Yeah.
By the time you hear it, it'll be after Thanksgiving. But we're recording this the night before Thanksgiving, Thanksgiving Eve.
Ugh.
And do you remember when that was a big, huge deal?
I made a lot of money Thanksgiving Eves.
When we were young.
DJing. Oh, up until 30. And then I stopped about six years ago.
Up until 30, I didn't work or DJ, but I went out.
Yeah, I don't have...
It was a big night to hang out. Yeah, now I'm like...
You know, I'm looking on Instagram and I'm seeing just a couple of friends and acquaintances saying, oh, pre-gaming. And I just look at them all, yo, I don't even have the energy.
No. Like, I don't have the energy for the main game.
Like, it's 10 o'clock at night right now. And this is the highlight of my evening. Like, this is what I want to do.
Yeah.
Because then I want to lay down, attempt to go to sleep, or just stay up all night, and then go to the gym, do some cardio, and then tomorrow...
This is it for me, too. I don't even want to be here. Yeah. I'd rather be at home in bed right now.
Just thinking about Friday.
Just thinking about almost waffle time, baby.
But yeah, I remember that, man. It was just...
It was wild. It was wild.
Insane.
I remember I would kiss people. You do makeouts?
Oh, yes.
Do the kids still call it making out?
I think they call it hooking up.
Or do they go straight to the anal sex these days? When I was a young man, we would kiss.
Yeah, see, but I also remember...
We'd go to the sop hock, and we'd share a malt.
She would wear her bobby socks.
Yeah. When I really liked a dame, I'd give her my pin.
I gave her my varsity jacket.
Oh, I met this one girl. She was a real tomato, I gotta tell you. She was the bee's knees, the cat's pajamas.
She was the twinkle in my eye.
Absolutely.
She would make my heart do the old 23 skidoo.
Wowzers in my trousers.
It's not a 50s reference. That was a little too risque. No, but I remember when the term hooking up just meant, yeah, I hooked up with her. What do you mean you hooked up
with
her?
That means sex, right?
You kissed her? I was like, yeah, I kissed her.
Right.
Nowadays, like, oh, you want to hook up? Yeah, I'll kiss you. No, I mean you come over my house and
right.
have sex.
Hook up is the whole thing.
I was like, wait a minute. That's called hooking up now?
Yeah.
And they're like, dude, how old are you? Like, 35?
I remember when I was a young man, people would call making out going.
Yes!
What happened? I mean, we went. We're going.
We're going.
There's not a lot of news, but there's a big piece of news. We lost Mr. Stan Lee.
An icon.
Excelsior!
Now, the last time we spoke about Stan...
We were talking about how weird things were and how, you know, people were taking money from him and stealing his blood. And
he would show his old balls to somebody.
Yeah, it
was bad.
That weird story.
He lasted way longer than I expected.
95. Holy moly. That is insane. I mean, I guess, well, let's not assume that everybody knows everything. So let's say, what did he do?
He created an entire universe for kids to dream and use their imaginations. That's what Stan Lee did.
He began in the business in 1939 and created or co-created Black Panther, Spider-Man, X-Men, Thor, Iron Man, Fantastic Four, The Incredible Hulk, Daredevil, Ant-Man, amongst others. All right, so what did he really do? Okay.
What did he really do?
So before Stan Lee, you had your Supermans, your Batmans. You had these amazing, omnipotent superheroes that in their normal lives didn't matter. It didn't matter what Bruce Wayne was doing. It didn't matter what Clark Kent was doing. That was just filler. The important thing was that they were superheroes, and as superheroes, they went on adventures and they dealt with villains. But Stan Lee was the person who thought, well, we can get a lot of drama out of having their real identities be real people and have problems. So when he had the idea for Spider-Man, who was really a teenage kid, the editor at the time said, no, you can't do this because teenagers can only be sidekicks like Robin, Batman and Robin. So Spider-Man could be a sidekick. And Stan Lee was like, no, that's the point is that he's not really a man. He's a boy, but when he puts on the suit, he's becoming a man. him having to be a superhero, but also balance a girlfriend that he doesn't want to tell, an aunt who's older, who he has to take care of,
and
high school, and bullies. And that's what made Spider-Man amazing. And then from there, he just pushed it further. You had Incredible Hulk dealt with depression and dealt with hating himself. You had Iron Man, who was an egomaniac and an alcoholic. You know, basically, he put as much work into the human part of them as the superhero part of them. And that's how he changed superheroes as a genre.
I think when you do speak of Stan, you also have to speak of Jack Kirby.
Yes.
Stan was the face of Marvel.
Right.
And he wrote the stories and created the origins.
Right.
But the look and the tone,
right,
and the texture of just the pages alone is Jack Kirby.
Right.
So now I don't know what the process would be. Would Jack draw up a spec and then Stan would put words to it?
Yeah.
Or would Stan write something and then Jack would go off what Stan
would
write?
Well, I know a little bit about that. When Stan Lee was really cooking and he was doing everything and he was working on a bunch of books and also editing, he started to do this thing where he was like, listen, guys, I have no time to write scripts. So come have a meeting with me and I'll tell you what the issue is. You draw it. Don't put any dialogue in it. Send it back to me and I'll look at your drawings and then I'll put in the dialogue. And that simple change made it so much more visual, because it wasn't we've got a script and now we're trying to draw the script. It's we're telling the story visually and then Stan will come in and put in the dialogue where it's needed. One of the things about Stan Lee, which I don't know is his fault necessarily, was sometimes people said that he took too much credit, because typically in comic books, two people will take credit for the creation, whoever drew it, and like Siegel and Schuster. One drew Superman, one invented, so one came up with the idea of Superman.
Same thing happens with Ditko and Stan.
Right.
Spider-Man and Doctor Strange.
Right.
They did that together.
Right. But the thing is, Stan was also like a mascot. All the cameos and the talk show appearances. The first time I ever saw him was in Mallrats.
Himself. I saw him before that.
Really? That was the first time I ever saw him.
Where the toupee was really, really bad.
Yeah,
and it was
more
like
he had. Sorry, what are you saying?
The toupee.
He didn't wear a toupee.
Oh, okay.
What are you saying right now?
Oh, I'm going to drop some knowledge here. That was a hairpiece.
That can't be.
That was a hairpiece.
But it was so bad. Why would you have a hairpiece that looks like you're balding?
Because I just think he was just wanted to give a little nod at a wink, like.
I need a minute.
Sorry.
Holy shit. I hope he's buried with it.
I would assume.
I hope he's buried in an Iron Man suit.
No,
we should put him in an Iron Man suit and just send him up into the atmosphere.
No, they put him in a Spider-Man suit. Because Spider-Man was what launched his career.
We should launch him into space.
You think so?
Yeah. When I heard, it was funny, I was teaching a film class, and film students tend to be a little bit more nerdy. So I was at work, and a student came in looking heartbroken and said, "Professor, did you hear the news? We've lost Stan Lee." The kid was really upset, and then like five more kids came in and told me, and I was like, yeah, I know. I actually wasn't saddened. It gave me a moment to like remember all the cool things about him, and I liked that we as a culture like stopped for a minute and thought about him. But 95 is an amazing run, and he seemed unhappy without his wife, and what more could the man accomplish? You know, if somebody dies at 40, oh my God, they've been taken too soon. But 95, bless you, go on, like Excelsior.
When did he stop writing comic books?
I'm not sure. Because technically speaking, like, he wrote, like, even up into the 90s, he wrote, like, not very great comic books.
Was it the strips, too?
The original oh, I don't know.
Because remember, if I don't know if you know, but the Spider-Man comic strip in the Staten Island Advance has been decades long.
Right.
And I don't see any other writer. It's just Stan Lee. Now, maybe somebody ghostwrites?
I don't know.
Because it's real simple writing.
Yeah.
He was a simple writer, though. He wasn't the greatest writer.
It wasn't this amazing complexity.
He just knew how to adapt with the times, because when Spider-Man and the Fantastic Four and the Hulk, he just knew how to adapt with the times. And I think he was so socially aware,
mm-hmm.
more so than DC.
Oh, yeah.
Where DC would just go, well, we have our standards. We have Batman, we have Superman, we have the right. Justice League.
And they were basically a monopoly before Stan came and really, like, challenged them.
Yeah. But if you read what he wrote,
yeah,
it's very simple. You're not getting Alan Moore type writing.
No, no, no. And he knew that.
But I think also the climate back then
yeah.
needed to be more visual and less words.
But when he first started writing, there was still a code. So he couldn't do a lot of stuff, you know, in
the beginning. He was the first person to say, fuck the code.
Right. He was like, it was an issue of Spider-Man, right?
With drugs.
And he was like, you know what? Let's not put the code on it. It won't be on the cover, and I bet the world will end. And he did it.
And it didn't end.
And that was it. Exactly. He created an audience because he had the letters from the editor in the back of the issues. And it would be letters to Stan, and people would write to him. He'd write back to them. This is where Excelsior came from, because he would sign his name Excelsior. This is when he started referring to Marvel fans as true believers.
So, what a different time.
Yeah, exactly.
You're not getting the editor-in-chief of Marvel Comics to do that.
Right. Well, we don't live in a magazine culture anymore.
No.
And essentially, comic books were, at least from a manufacturing point of view, magazines.
Yeah, but comic book culture still thrives where magazine culture doesn't. I mean, you know, Glamour magazine is ceasing publication.
Really?
Yeah. Now they're just going digital.
Yeah, that's sad.
And that's been around for decades. Eight decades.
Yeah, that's the way it is now.
When somebody passes on, you usually think, what do they leave behind?
Yeah.
And a dude like him is leaving behind work that most likely will carry on until the end of time.
I mean, you can make the argument that when he died last week at the age of 95, he was more popular than he had ever been. And his creations were more popular than ever.
Oh, his creations in the last decade or so have changed the way film is done.
Fans knew who he was, but now everybody knows who he is.
Well, he was a genuine star.
Well, he had great appeal, and he had a way of ingratiating himself to, you know, like if you look at him on talk shows, he's a great way of, like, he's got all these little colloquialisms and like little like sayings and jokes and stuff.
He would draw you in where a Ditko or let's just say a Kirby couldn't do that.
Yeah.
You know?
He was a showman.
Even a Todd McFarlane who goes on his Facebook Live and draws these beautiful things and gives a step by step. He has a little personality, but not as dynamic as Stan.
Todd McFarlane is like a known asshole.
Yeah.
He's like a dick. Did you see that video I posted on Facebook where it was Rob Liefeld, Todd McFarlane, and Stan Lee, and Stan Lee keeps like making fun of them?
Yeah.
They're like drawing stuff, and he's like, what's with all the, where's the feet? You don't draw feet? Everyone knows Rob Liefeld can't fucking
draw feet.
They even make a joke about it in Deadpool 2. And he's talking about all the guns. He's like, why would he have those guns? He's just like ranking on them. But you actually see in his mind, like, he wouldn't just draw what looks cool. He'd be like, why would you have that?
Yeah.
Like, he's like, what's with all the pockets? Because if you don't know, in the 90s, there was this look in comic books of like big, insanely muscular people, like just ridiculously muscular and pockets everywhere and belts and clips.
It was like
Cable from the comics.
It was
like,
very military.
Yeah.
They were just massive. And the women as well. They were just massively drawn.
Yeah, yeah.
Like they had these just huge physiques.
Yeah.
And it just did not look appealing. Even Spider-Man was going down that road for a little while.
Yeah. The accessories were so – it's such a big thing in the 90s.
It was so bad. But, you know, Stan leaves behind work that is timeless and work that is forever. How many people can you say created an entire universe that has shaped people's lives just by watching and reading?
I can't think of anybody. I mean
– I can think of two people. Stan Lee.
Yeah.
Well, I can think of – you know what? I can think of four.
Yeah.
I'll tell you my four. Stan Lee with Marvel.
Mm-hmm.
Vince McMahon with the WWE.
Okay.
Steve Jobs and Bill Gates.
Yeah, but Steve Jobs and Bill Gates, I mean...
They created... Look, Michael.
Yeah.
Look. These phones are attached to our...
Yeah, but
there's
a difference between...
But they still...
But these aren't characters. These aren't concepts and
ideas. The iPhone's not a concept or an idea?
No, but it's a utility. It's like I wouldn't put the creator of the telephone on this list.
But if you think about it, though, he's taking what is an old tech and he put a new spin on it.
If I were to make
that a list, was creative ingenuity.
Oh, absolutely. I'm not saying that it isn't.
Touchscreen phones, video camera phones.
Yeah, but what I'm saying is what Stan Lee did.
Limitless imagination.
What Stan Lee did was he created a fictional universe that had its own rules and it was populated with its own people where it really
that's
was.
That's not Apple?
No,
it's not its own world that's populated by its own people and has its own unique language and code?
There aren't people in that phone. The only other person I would put with Stan Lee
is Vince McMahon.
No. I would,
what?
I mean, maybe. I guess there's a lot of characters there and stuff,
brother,
and it's changed.
Brother, you're going to tell me Vince McMahon did not do what Stan Lee did? Hulk Hogan's not a cartoon character? Randy Savage?
No, it's
the
a world
Ultimate
of characters.
Warrior?
I would say Stephen King. He's got a million books, and in the world that he's created, there are rules, there's magic, there are things that you see repeat throughout. There are characters that cross over.
Yeah, but
did he
have
of
the
a
same,
universe?
But did he have the same impact that a Spider-Man?
No, he didn't.
And a Hulk Hogan had.
No, I don't think there's anybody for what Stan Lee did specifically. I don't think there's anyone else that you can think about.
I say Vince.
All right,
Vince created an entire world.
I mean, it's certainly a rogues gallery of characters that are recognizable.
There is a universe and a language within World Wrestling Entertainment.
But is there transmedia there?
Oh, totally. You don't think so?
I'm asking you, is there comics and, you know, with Marvel, you've got comics and movies and radio and cartoons and TV shows. You've got a lot of different media.
You have wrestling podcasts that specifically cover WWE. WWE also has had several cartoons. Two of them are on the network now. Several spin-off shows within the WWE. There is a universe within that has several brands of professional wrestling housed in the WWE, similar to a multiverse that are running parallel with each other.
Uh-huh.
So, yeah, I think they generate a lot of similarities between the Marvel universe.
If you break down what Stan Lee is, there's sort of two elements. There's the one part where they create a fictional world that's populated with people and rules, and it's its own imaginative world. And then the other part would be to have a huge cultural impact.
But he did it in New York, though.
Right.
Which I like. Like, the Hulk went across America.
Right, unlike DC, where they would always create fictional
Which is
cities.
Why DC, to me, it was never believable. Like, the most believable comic book, and again, you're probably going to call me, you know, just a fanboy, is Swamp Thing, because it was set in Louisiana.
I think when we talk about believability or realism, or when people say it's realistic, I think we mean a bunch of different things. It's a very, like, precarious term. I think sometimes we think it means that what the characters do are they behave in ways that we recognize as the way we would behave, even if they are outlandish characters. That's how you can have something like Lord of the Rings and someone say it feels realistic. His version of New York, though, is not the real New York we live in. Stanley's New York is the New
way
York...
Way more enjoyable.
Right. It's the New York where you've got Poncho living in the sewers and
Daredevil running around Hell's Kitchen.
Right. And Hell's Kitchen is basically a huge place where in real life Hell's Kitchen's not that big.
Yeah.
Not so big that you need four superheroes dealing with it. So everybody was very sad about Stan Lee's death, but one person decided, hey, this is a good time. Let me take the death of this celebrity, this beloved celebrity, as a way of like me making a sort of glib, nasty point. So Bill Maher, you remember him from the early 2000s, right, when he was relevant? Bill Maher.
Politically incorrect?
Right. He was a comedian, and then he was a sort of political comedian. Now he's more of like a political pundit than a comedian. And he's also a man without a country because he is so politically incorrect that contemporary liberals don't like him. So Republicans certainly don't like him, and now young Democrats don't like him. So he kind of, you know, his real heyday was during the George W. Bush administration. And then even like when Obama came to office, he kind of lost relevance. And now he seems as angry at the liberal people as the conservative people. It's like, I'm an atheist, but I don't like make it a big part of my life. I don't argue with people. I don't like tell people. It's like my vegetarianism. It's not my one defining thing. But Bill Maher is the negative stereotype of an atheist, someone who's smug and condescending and goes, oh, what do you believe in, a magic man in the sky? And, you know, like, I'm an atheist, but I can understand why someone would believe in a God and why that's something that exists. I don't think that it's – I don't believe in God, but I understand why. I would never say that someone's stupid because they do, or make a whole fucking stupid documentary about how you're stupid if you do, like Bill Maher did. So anyway, Bill Maher wrote this blog where he said, the guy who created Spider-Man and the Hulk has died, and America is mourning. Deep, deep mourning for a man who inspired millions to, I don't know, watch a movie, I guess. Someone in Reddit posted, I'm so incredibly grateful I live in a world that included Stan Lee. Personally, I'm grateful I live in a world that included oxygen and trees. But to each his own. Now, I have nothing against comic books. I read them now and then when I was a kid, and that was all out of Hardy Boys. But the assumption everyone had back then, both the adults and the kids, was that comics were for kids. When you grew up, you moved on to big boy books without the pictures.
What a douche.
He goes on that way, and he even ends by somehow saying that Stan Lee's the reason Trump is the president. Because the final sentence is, the problem is we're using our smarts on stupid stuff. I don't think it's a huge stretch to suggest that Donald Trump can only get elected in a country that thinks comic books are important.
How do you shoehorn in Donald Trump in comic books?
First of all, let's say you do have this feeling, which is stupid because about 20, 25 years ago, we had the British invasion where Alan Moore and
Neil Gaiman.
Right. You had all these British people come and literally they changed the form. You know, no one argues that the stuff from the 50s is for kids. Even the stuff from the 60s, even though it was good, is for kids. In the 70s and 80s, it became not for kids. It started being sold to older audiences. It started having deeper themes. So he's just wrong with history of it. It's not just for kids.
But the kids that read the comic books also grew up to become the adult fans.
Right. First of all, every premise he has is flawed and glib and just stupid.
Now, he's a guy that doesn't know how to have fun.
No, he seems like a real fun guy, doesn't he?
Yeah.
Why take the death of Stan Lee as your opportunity to put this out there? And also trash everyone. You're an idiot if you like it, which is stupid. Also, the whole premise of he inspired people to, I don't know, watch a movie. No, he inspired people to read more and read quote-unquote big boy books. I read big boy books and I read comic books. And I know a lot of adults and great intellectuals that read, quote, big boy books and comic books. And he inspired people to, I don't know, go to the gym and become powerful. And he inspired people to be nice to one another. And he inspired people in the 60s to treat other people kindly. Less bigoted, and he inspired people to become artists and become writers.
Sounds like a real menace to me.
Yeah, I mean, it smacks of your angry uncle who kind of has an opinion, but it's based on nothing, but he's going to tell it to you anyway. The internet got mad at Bill Maher. People started tweeting at him. Neil Gaiman said, more people care about Stan Lee being dead than Bill Maher being alive.
I love him.
Someone from the Hollywood Reporter, who I guess had been friends with Stan Lee, wrote an article called Why You're Wrong About My Friend Stan Lee. And this basically, the world was like, hey, you know, this is ill-informed and stupid. But let me read you this, because Stan Lee's company, Power Entertainment, retorted him online. Mr. Maher, comic books, like all literature, are storytelling devices. When written well by great creators such as Stan Lee, they make us feel, make us think, and teach us lessons that hopefully make us better human beings. One lesson Stan taught so many of us was tolerance and respect. And thanks to that message, we are grateful that we can say you have the right to your opinion that comics are childish and unsophisticated. Many said the same about Dickens, Steinbeck, Melville, and even Shakespeare. But to say Stan Lee merely inspired people to, quote, watch a movie is, in our opinion, frankly disgusting. Countless people can attest to how Stan inspired them to read, taught them that the world is not made up of absolutes, and that heroes can have flaws, and even villains can show humanity within their souls. He gave us the X-Men, Black Panther, Spider-Man, many other heroes and stories that offered hope to those who felt different and bullied, while inspiring countless to be creative and dream of great things to come. Our shock at your comments makes us want to say, "Nuff said, Bill," but instead we will rely on another of Stan's lessons to remind you that you have a powerful platform, so please remember, with great power, there must also come great responsibility.
Great line,
Stan. And in typical Bill Maher fashion, he's never apologized for anything. He doubled down. He was interviewed by Larry King, and Larry King was like, "Hey, like, why did you say this?" And he goes, "Well, the fact that people are freaking out just proves my point." His big point is that we're a dumb country. And look, I'm not somebody who doesn't criticize the country. If you've listened to this podcast, I've got plenty of things to criticize. But this thing of, like, I'm smart and you're dumb, and this country would be better if everyone listened to me, it's the height of hypocrisy. Because this guy is, you know, who's Bill Maher? Bill Maher is someone who was not that funny, but got into show business because during the comedy boom of the 1980s, the door was wide open and a lot of people got in that wouldn't get in now. He doesn't have the chops. He wouldn't get in now if he was a comic now. He's got half intellectual, half thought out, half baked ideas about politics. I mean, I used to agree with him a lot because I'm a liberal person, but in the last many years, he's become very Islamophobic, and he let his atheism grow into Islamophobia. And I'm an atheist, but I would never say this religion is worse than this religion is worse than this religion, or say what Bill Maher says, where he says Muslims are inherently violent people because their religion is inherently violent, and we're wrong to assume that every religion is exactly the same. That's what really made me turn against him, was his Islamophobia.
As a host, he said that.
Yeah. Well, he gave up on being funny a long time ago. He no longer feels the need to tell jokes or be likable in any sort of way. But, you know, fuck you, Bill Maher.
I want to fight that guy so bad.
Bill Maher?
Yeah. You pompous pseudo-intellectual. Let me use big words and have a different cadence and some drawn-out pauses and canned laughter.
Let me fucking have Gore Vidal on my show and kiss his ass. And I mean, I like Gore Vidal, but, you know, hanging out with a smart person doesn't make you smart.
Nah.
Contrary to Bill Maher's belief.
Just like this show.
I hang out with you and I can't seem to enjoy carrots.
That's what I'm saying. I can't sit here and go, "Ooh, the mise-en-scene of this film."
No, I don't sound like that, do I? That's not what my voice sounds like.
I'll have to ask your brother Anthony next time I see him.
Speaking of cinema, let us stroll on over to Trailer Corner. Do you know, Emilio, that the reason why we call them trailers is because they used to appear after the film?
I did not know
that. They trailed after the film.
Ah.
It doesn't make sense that they're called trailers now. They should be called proceeders. Two Toy Story 4 trailers come out in two consecutive days.
I like it. And they showed nothing with the film.
I think they think, we're Toy Story 4. You're going to see us. Who gives a shit?
They're kind of right.
They are right. What did you think of the first one?
With the music and they're just hanging out?
Yeah.
I loved it. But I like the Key and Peele one better.
Yeah, the first one is, how do you describe it?
It's just fun. They're in like a
they're holding hands and it's like just slow motion.
Yeah, and they're like going ring around the Rosie.
Yeah, imagine like the camera, the virtual camera is in the middle of them as in a circle, and it's just you see them sort of, you know, moving through the frame,
to
moving
the through most the music. Gooeyest pop song ever, too.
Yeah, and then we come upon, I guess, the new character who is a toy made out of a spork.
Yeah,
he looks like he's screaming and going, "I don't belong here." And I suppose that's who the story's about? I don't know. It's very odd.
Maybe it's not.
You think that's just a random?
I don't know. I can't see them basing all of Toy Story on a spork. But I can see the spork being there for comic relief.
Yeah.
Like maybe the new girl that had all of Andy's toys also wanted to create a toy.
Oh, right. I forgot there's a new girl. Because I was going to say Andy's like 71 now, right?
Yeah, he's like 106.
See, if I were to write Toy Story 4, it would be Andy, but Andy would be my age, and his toys would all be on shelves like behind glass. And they'd be like, we want to get out of here. We're sick of being displayed.
We don't get played with.
Yeah. No one plays with us. He just dusts us every once in a while.
God, do you see what he does at night?
But yeah, there's a little girl who...
So maybe she wanted to create Sporky.
And she's going to become a villain like the doll maker.
Because, listen, that trailer is awesome because it gives us nothing. It shows nothing.
Right. And whatever they show, that's definitely not stuff that's in the movie. Both trailers, which are both teasers...
Give you nothing.
...are just nothing. The second teaser, which came out the very next day, it looks like a carnival.
The second trailer is better than the first trailer.
You've got Key and Peele in it playing stuffed animals, and it looks like they're at a carnival.
I don't know what that was.
Like, it looks like they're like one of those like dart games, like maybe like you win them at a carnival.
And they're just rambling.
And they're talking about the first trailer.
Yeah.
They're talking about the trailer that came out yesterday. Like, oh, did you see the new trailer? Which is... What, how many meta levels are
it
we
was,
on?
It was extremely meta.
Yeah.
It was a trailer within a trailer talking about a trailer.
And I liked that it was Key and Peele.
Their back and forth, their banter was great.
It was basically the bit they do where they're doormen talking. I hope Key and Peele are actually in the movie.
I would like to see them as toys.
That'd be perfect.
How many more of these things can they really do?
I mean, let's break it down for real. Toy Story 1, which I saw in the theater when I was a little kid, love it. Perfect.
Woody's kind of a dick, though, in Toy Story 1.
Oh, you think so?
I just seen it. I just watched it for the first time ever.
For the first time ever? Why do you think he's a dick?
He's a fucking bully.
Okay.
Straight bully. Clearly, Buzz Lightyear has identity issues.
Yes.
We get that. But you got to make fun.
Wow, I've never seen this take.
Of this person? You're going to make fun of their mental, maybe, instability? Or maybe they got to come to the realization on their own.
It was the 90s, you know. It was a ruder time.
But he was a dick, though. He was the villain. It wasn't Sid. It was Woody. Woody was the villain.
By the way.
Woody was the reason why they fell out of the gas station.
Mm-hmm.
Woody's the reason why they ended up at Pizza Planet.
Yeah.
Woody was the reason why they ended up at fucking Sid's house.
Poor Sid, all he is a kit basher. He's just putting together his own toys. They make it like he's a psycho.
Which I like Sid's toys.
Yeah.
Sid's toys are pretty awesome.
They're interesting. He's an artist.
The duck with the muscles?
Right. We're supposed to think he's insane because we know the toys are real. But he doesn't know that. He's a kid. Toy Story 2, I saw only once, and I have no memories of it other than being bored.
Yeah.
And thinking Jessie sucks and her song sucks.
I just watched that, too.
I don't care about Jessie. Toy Story 3 was good, although everyone cries at the end of it, and I didn't cry at the end of it. Everyone's like, oh, the ending's so sad. It's like... Not to sound like Bill Maher, but people think of people like The Godfather, Gone with the Wind, Citizen Kane, Toy Story 3, the classics. And it's like, all right, I love Toy Story 3. It was a lot of fun.
Now, was that originally a Pixar movie or was that a Disney movie?
Pixar.
Which is now
it was Pixar's first feature length.
But Disney bought Pixar.
Yeah.
Because they couldn't beat Pixar.
I don't know when the buying happened. I think Pixar, I might be wrong here, but I think Pixar actually started by Lucas. I think it was an offshoot of Lucas.
Are you serious?
Yeah.
So we have Lucas to thank for all this.
I think so.
Ah, thanks.
The power of myth. And Toy Story 4, look, am I going to see it? Of course I'm going to see
it.
Do I feel like we need a Toy Story 4? No.
The Wikipedia I read sounds like it ended perfectly.
And it's like you're at a point where it's anachronistic. Look, with Toy Story 1, you had a traditional like cowboy doll, which who in the 90s was playing with cowboy dolls, but forget about that. You have Buzz Lightyear, who is clearly a Power Ranger, right?
He was a Space Ranger.
He was the new cool plastic toy.
LED light, whole nine.
But now it's 2018. It'll be 2019 when the film comes out. Whoever, the little girl that Andy gave the toys to, she's on her iPad. She's not playing with Woody or Buzz. She sold them on eBay for drugs.
That's why. They need a Mike Buongiorno-type character.
If you let me write a Toy Story sequel, I've got so many ideas. All right. Picture it. We open up. It's 1,000 years in the future. Similar to the film WALL-E, it's nothing but garbage everywhere. Nothing but plastic. No humans left on Earth. But we've got Buzz and Woody, because they've lasted.
They don't die.
Right. They've been alive so long that everything is meaningless to them. And Buzz starts trying to find ways to hurt himself so he can feel.
Oh, Jesus.
Yeah.
It's a little too much for a cartoon.
I mean, let's get into it.
I just thought you were going to write something about a guy wearing a Rick and Morty t-shirt, goes to a flea market, finds a Woody and Buzz Lightyear, buys them, takes them
because
home.
Because I'm wearing a Rick and Morty shirt right now.
I'm making it about you. Yeah, clearly.
I don't know why you're making
and
it about
me. And they just see you stare at the toys for like hours.
I think actually it would be funny if a Toy Story sequel was about an adult collector.
Yeah.
You know, but especially because it would make sense because Buzz Lightyear was supposed to be based on a TV show. And 20 years later, that show's not still on. Unless they reboot it. That'd be a fun idea. Like they reboot Buzz Lightyear and then there's a new Buzz Lightyear who's like a cooler design. And he's voiced by like Ryan Reynolds. Ryan Reynolds everything. He can voice everyone he wants.
Speaking of Ryan Reynolds, Pikachu Detective.
Detective Pikachu?
Mm.
Pika Pika. Now, before we get into it, do you know anything about Pokemon?
A little bit. My brother was a Pokemon.
I know nothing because Pokemon...
He collected the cards.
See, for me, it was when I was, like, getting into high school. So, like, you know, like, when I was young, I was into toys and shit. And then in high school, you're like, I'm a cool guy.
I like girls.
Right, right. And then you get into your 20s again and you start liking toys again. Whereas Pokemon completely missed me because it was in that time where I was like, I won't watch a kid show. So I know nothing.
Yeah.
I know Pikachu. I was talking to our friend Vin Forte, and I was asking him about Detective Pikachu, and he told me something that blew my mind. Pikachu is a species. So Detective Pikachu is not the same Pikachu that you know from the cartoon.
Yeah, he doesn't run around with Ash. This Pikachu is another Pikachu.
That blew my mind.
Well, that's what it is. Vinny's right. It's a whole species of just these animals. So just because you catch a Bulbasaur, you're not just catching the one Bulbasaur. It's like...
A whole species.
It's like, yeah, it's like
them.
Catching a lion.
But for some reason, I thought like there was only one and only Pikachu.
No.
So why don't they have unique names like Phil the Pikachu?
Because they say their name constantly. So Pikachu only says Pikachu.
But Ash's Pikachu, why didn't he give him like a nickname? Like, this is my Pikachu. Philip.
You know, that's a good question. But right? Do we have to name everything? Maybe he'd just like to be called Pikachu.
But what if there were other Pikachus there, and he said, hey, Pikachu, and four of them turned around?
Well, there wasn't. For the sake of continuity in the TV show, there was not.
All right. Well, all I can tell you is a man who knows nothing about Pokemon other than the iconography of Sir Pikachu.
But let's be honest, though. Most people, I think, will be casual fans of this.
You think so?
Well, I know it'll have, like, its niche, but, you know, people are going to want to watch this anyway because they just associate what you did. That Pikachu is probably the last of his species. Maybe he's, like, the dodo bird and there's, like, one left.
Well, for me, it's like Hello Kitty. Like, I don't know anything about the show or the cards, never played any of the games, but I know what a Pikachu is. I know what it looks like.
You
I know
identify
that
what it is.
Right.
But you don't know that it's a species. I thought the trailer was
good. I'm not going to lie. I loved the trailer. I watched it like 100 times.
I just wish it wasn't Ryan Reynolds' voice. But even though I like it, I wanted a little bit more of a gruffer kind of voice. Like, I would have liked maybe Danny DeVito.
You're not the first person to say that. I think Danny DeVito would be funny because obviously he's so not what the character looks like.
Yeah.
But
and he has this gruff like, ah.
Well, the thing about Ryan, I mean, like, the criticism a lot of people have had is it's just Deadpool as a Pikachu.
Yeah, that's it. It's just Deadpool.
But, you know, in Waiting, he's just Deadpool as a waiter. You know what I mean? Like,
well, essentially, Ryan Reynolds has been playing the same character for 20 years.
He's got one bit, you know.
Van Wilder.
I love him. I love Just Friends.
Yeah.
That's a fun one.
Van Wilder was great.
You know, I've never seen Van Wilder.
I think he would get a kick out of it.
I have seen Van Wilder, too. The
Rise of Taj?
Rise of Taj.
That's a good one, too.
Actually, I haven't. I just wanted to say that name.
I seen it, actually.
Because I bring nothing to it, I've got nothing to be upset about. I know a lot of Pokemon fans are like, this is weird.
It should be about the movie.
Right. Like it's your or...
Who gives a shit?
Like, apparently, Detective Pikachu is one of the many video games. It's a unique game. It's different from a lot of the other games. So some people are like... It's weird that the first live-action American film is based on this rather than...
I like it.
One of the other parts of the property.
Come out the gate swinging, doing something different. Why go in the same fucking dog and pony show?
Yeah, I think it's because they've been animated Pokemon movies, right?
Yeah, and I like the way they look CGI wise.
They look good. They look like fantastic. The designs.
Just I like the back and forth between him and the human character.
Yes, yes, yes. I'm so lonely.
You can hear me.
Yeah.
And then he's talking to him and you just hear Pika?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Pika, Pika? And then he's talking to him and he can actually hear him.
I think they put that in the trailer to calm down people that are upset that it was Ryan Reynolds. They wanted to, you know, cool you down right away and tell you, don't worry, like, it's still a Pikachu that says Pika, Pika, but he just can understand him for some reason.
Like, guys, don't worry. He's still going to say Pika Pika.
Because when the news first broke, we talked about it on our show, and we were saying, like, wait, does he even talk? He thought he doesn't talk.
And then once the trailer came out several months later, I was like, wow, we have to retract several statements.
It looks cool.
Because I like the way this looks. I will go see this.
Cool. I'm going to see it. God
speaking
damn it.
Of Ryan Reynolds, Deadpool.
Once upon a Deadpool. So we've talked about this before, so you know what it is. It's Deadpool 2 cut into a PG-13 version.
Yeah. And it's the telling of the Princess Bride.
Fred Savage in the trailer was really funny. The bit that really got me when he's like, I prefer Marvel movies. And Deadpool goes, we are Marvel. And he's like, yeah, Marvel licensed by Fox. It's like if Nickelback produced Beatles records. I mean, it's music, but it sucks.
It was such a smart trailer. And I'm really curious to see how and where they splice in Fred and Deadpool sitting.
Yeah.
Like how it was when Fred Savage was talking to Peter Falk as the grandfather and the grandson in The Princess Bride.
Chapter 1.
As you wish.
They showed some clips from the film itself, and I recognize scenes, but not what they showed. So there must have been just a lot of footage left on the floor that they're making. Because it looks like it's more than just PG-13 version. It looks like there's just different jokes.
So what do you think, a whole new movie?
I think the same basic story,
Different
jokes.
So do you think they probably ad-libbed a couple times?
I think he's probably ad-libbing all day. Because he's the producer. He's Deadpool. No one's going to say, hey, let's wrap it up. Let's go to lunch. He probably says something different in every fucking...
Because
he's got to overdub it anyway. So who gives a shit what he says?
Because Deadpool 2 was really good.
Yeah.
From start to finish, it was good. It was consistent. And I liked the way it was edited.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, there's a scene in the trailer for Once Upon a Deadpool where you see two old people on a bench and Deadpool goes, I really like you working up. Which that's not in the regular cut of the movie.
No.
So...
I think they had to wait for it to be a Disney thing.
Oh, maybe. See, part of me is like, I want it to be successful because a lot of it's going to charity. But part of me is worried that if it is successful, Disney will go, oh, he's PG-13 from now on.
No, I think what they would probably do is, okay, listen, here's what we're going to do. We get it. It's its own thing. It's still under the Disney umbrella. You're owned by us now. We got you. Mm-hmm. The only thing we're going to do is give you more money to film and give you a better rollout marketing-wise. Do what you have to do, but then maybe you figure out a creative way to boost DVD sales and give us a PG-13 version when it comes out. So I think maybe we can get something like this all the time.
So they'll keep making PG-13 versions?
Yeah. The PG-13 cut.
Okay. And if he hangs out in like an Avengers movie, he has to act PG-13-ish.
Which is, I think, fine.
He doesn't...
I think this will be...
He's not really cursing a lot, right? It's mostly just violence that gets the cut.
Yeah, and I think they could probably play that up. Like, do you really have to kill everybody?
Yeah, he'd be good. You know, like that trailer for that video game that he's in.
Listen, I just want to see him have a moment with Spider-Man at this point.
And him touch him on the shoulder.
Yeah.
Lovingly. Because he likes Spider-Man.
Yeah.
I want my life to be like the Fred Savage vehicle Wonder Years, but with Ryan Reynolds
doing the voiceover.
Yeah, I want him to be my Daniel Stern. Like right now, you hear Ryan Reynolds like, as I sit there podcasting with Emilio, I couldn't help but think, should he shave that beard?
And then to everything, turn, 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 turn.
That was the greatest summer of my life.
It is a season, turn, turn.
And that was my first kiss. That was the pilot, yeah, his first kiss.
Winnie Cooper.
Winnie Cooper.
She went on to become a big mathematician.
She did. Not Winnie Cooper, but the actual actress who played her.
No, Winnie Cooper went on to become an artist, living in Paris.
I watched that show sporadically.
Oh, I watched the whole thing.
Really?
I even binge-watched it on Netflix.
I hear on Netflix, though, it doesn't have any of the song licenses.
No, sadly.
Fuck that. No way.
It's the best part of the show.
No way.
It was the best part of the show.
What would you do if I sang out of tune?
Joe Cocker, man.
Would you stand up and walk out on me?
He sang that at Woodstock.
Yes,
he did. And he wasn't really a big star, and people were like, all right, Joe Cocker's on the stage. Let's go get a sandwich. And then he started with the, lend me your ears. And people were like, what the fuck is going on right now?
And then they had to watch because they were just tripping on so much fucking hallucinogens.
And then Martin Scorsese's there, coked out of his mind.
Filming everything.
Oh, my God. Pika Pika. It's all just Ryan Reynolds. He owns it all.
That's what I think now.
I want to
see them somehow shoehorn in Pikachu Deadpool.
He already tweeted Pikachu dressed as Deadpool on his own.
He don't stop.
Yeah.
Ryan Reynolds is a machine. He's a machine.
He's a one-man marketing.
He's a machine.
Yeah.
And I just like the fact that we might get more Josh Brolin because of this.
I'm always for more Josh Brolin.
You ever follow his Instagram?
No.
It's great.
Really?
It's just, yeah. He's such a, I don't know, it's something about, he's juvenile.
That's nice.
He's one of the greatest actors of our time right now.
Yeah.
He really is. And he's so diverse, but yet in his personal life, he's just a fucking goofball. Like, he just loves his wife, having a baby.
He seems to be enjoying life.
Like, you know what I mean? Like, you could tell he had some fucked up shit go on. He had a hard childhood. He was on drugs.
His dad was Marcus Welby.
His dad was Marcus Welby. You know? That was a great interview. That might have been the last great Marin interview.
It's the last one I listened to.
Yeah, me too.
All right. We should take a break.
What would you do if I sang out of tune? Would you stand up and walk out on me? Lend me your ears and I'll sing you a song. I will try not to sing out of key. Yeah. Oh, baby, how
welcome back to PCMC.
Merry Christmas.
No, not Merry Christmas. Oh, not yet.
We're not. It's, isn't it?
It's coming up. What, is this our salute to Christmas?
Does it start now?
I guess. Is everything a month now with us?
Why not? So Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas, people in the future.
We're starting early.
It's a Christmas time. It's a Christmas time. So it's the chill sesh. That's Emilio Sparks, the OG.
I don't.
The Princess of Power.
I don't.
What are these?
Oh,
what are these?
I wanted to give you something since we're in the spirit of giving,
mm-hmm.
and since it's Christmas time.
Yeah.
I want to give you your first pair of Jordans.
Now, technically speaking, I think I had Jordans as a little kid, but this is my first pair as a grown man.
As an adult.
Now, what Jordans are these?
These are Jordan 2s.
Why are you giving these to me?
Because, one, I hate the shoes that you wear. Two, I don't wear them. They've been sitting in my closet.
Uh-huh.
I clean them up for you nice.
They do look nice. If
And they're flat-footed for you, which I think is perfect.
What are you trying to say about me right now?
You have Fred Flintstone feet. But this was covered in the episode.
I thought you were trying to say I was a detective.
Oh, you were a gumshoe.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Pika Pika. Well, listen, this is a wonderful gift. I actually do need new sneakers, and I've been putting off buying them.
Well,
and these are lovely. are you okay with me wearing these? I'm going to wear these every day.
They should be worn. Now, when you teach your students, they'll be like, yo, mister, why you G'd up from the feet up?
I'd say, who's mister?
Your kids don't call you mister?
They call me professore.
Ah.
Signore.
They'll be like, yo, prof.
Yeah.
Why you G'd up from the feet up?
Now, how do I tie these?
You don't tie them at all.
I'm sorry?
You don't have to.
I don't have to?
No, you just tuck the laces in. You're good guap.
I don't like that.
Nah, why? It's easier like that.
But then they're like, they're open. And...
No, look, here's what you do. If you want to tie them, right?
Yeah.
You're doing like this. First you loop it, then you swoop it, and then you just put them underneath the tongue.
But is that good for support?
It's fine. You don't need support. What support do you need?
I'm going to wear these.
Yeah, but you're going to have good support on the heel. You're fine. Around the ankle, you're not going to do. You're fine. Put them on. Try it like that. See how that feels. Look how good that looks. No. Don't do that. Don't be that guy.
No, I don't like it. Yeah. I'm not 15.
But you got to show it off, though.
See, I don't understand. How is this a gift if you are telling me exactly how I'm supposed to use
them? I'm just telling you as a man who enjoys haberdashery.
Explain to people what we're talking about.
I gave you a pair of Jordan 2 sneakers.
No, I'm saying what I did was I, like a gentleman, like a man of my age, the tongue on the sneaker is merely made them stick out so you could see them.
Yeah.
But I put my pant over it so I look like a man. I look like a
gentleman. No. Don't say that because according to Tan from Queer Eye for the Straight Guy, he even likes to show off the tongue of the shoe.
I don't like that.
And you can do a little cuff.
I don't like that. It doesn't feel right.
It looks good though. You looked like a fucking dork putting your pant leg over your tongue.
Yeah, but that's what feels right.
Yeah, it does, but look how good you look right now.
I don't know if I look that good.
I think you look good.
I think I look like a man.
Ask your friend when you go eat beans and leaves on Friday. Mm. Hey, how do you like this? No tongue or tongue, you tell me.
I think I look like a man.
I think you look good.
Desperately holding on to you.
Absolutely not. I think you look great.
I just don't like the way it feels.
You're not feeling anything, though. What are you feeling?
You can feel the pant leg. It's like weird. I don't like it. My OCD doesn't like it. I don't want...
They look great on you, by the way.
I want them to work for me. I don't want to work for them. I don't work for these shoes.
I understand.
They work for me.
I understand.
Well, thank you very much. What else? What have you been watching? What have you been chilling with?
I've been watching the greatest television show of all time on Netflix.
What's that?
The Good Cop, starring Tony Danza and Josh Groban.
Singer Josh Groban?
Mm-hmm.
He's acting?
And he does a damn good job.
So what is this show about? It's like procedural?
It's weird. It's a noir program.
Uh-huh.
It's very lighthearted. First off, the creator of the show is the gentleman that created the television show Monk.
Mm-hmm.
So right then and there, you know you're going to get... There's going to be levels of suspense, but then there's also going to be ha-ha moments. But this television show specifically caters more towards the ha-ha. Yes, you have to figure out the whodunit.
Yeah.
Was it such and such in the library with the candlestick?
Uh-huh.
But it's not SVU. You're not getting that type of Law and Order crime with the Good Cop.
Is it a half hour or
44
hour?
Minutes.
Okay.
I thought the writing was sharp. I thought the writing was funny. Did I feel that the characters could have been fleshed out more? Yes. But I don't think you can do that in a 10-episode arc. I think you need to do that more, like later on down the line. Like at least 2 or 3 seasons in, you can really start to...
Is there going
to
be more?
No, they canceled it.
Wow, Netflix really put the axe on a lot of shows.
It was really good, though. I think it was probably the best thing Tony Danza's done in years.
Who did he play?
He was Tony Caruso.
Really?
Yeah.
Really?
I swear to God.
Oh, come on, man. Even him at this point's got to be like, please give me a name.
Maybe he just doesn't answer to anything else but Tony.
But that's the joke, and I'm sure he's sick of it at this age. Like, please, let's call him anything else.
Yeah, I play Tony Caruso.
Tony Caruso. What in real life does anyone have the last name Caruso? It feels like such a TV name. So who is Tony Caruso?
He's an ex-cop who was corrupt.
Okay.
He was on the take. And he went to jail.
Yeah.
Yeah, I did a bid.
So he's not a good cop.
I went up north. No, technically he is a good cop.
But he sounds like
a
bad cop.
No, he was a good cop that was just on the take. Mm-hmm. I turn my head this way. I get a little something. Get a little taste. But he was a very good cop. But then he did 7 years up north.
And what about Josh Groban? Who's he?
He plays his straight-laced, goody-goody son.
Oh, he plays his son?
Yes. He plays TJ, okay. Tony Jr.
Okay.
Yeah, but they call him the Boy Scout because he's straight-laced and doesn't believe in not going by the book, and everything has to be procedure and order. And I think he has a level of OCD because he has this overly sensibility where he knows he has to do the right thing. Like, there was a
boy, they sound like a real odd couple.
Mm-hmm.
One's one way and the other's the opposite way. I wonder if there's any conflict between them
and their father and son. They have this whole thing where
do they live together?
Yes, they do. The credits would roll, and then at the end they would show it in a newspaper form, who shot the busboy. Like, so, and they had all these like little tie-ins where they would, like, TJ would be on a case, and somehow it would be wrapped up with some hijinks that Tony was doing on the side, and their case would come together. Do you remember the movie directed by Shane Black that starred Robert Downey Jr.?
Kiss Kiss Bang Bang.
Mm-hmm.
It's like that?
Remember how they talked about Johnny Gossamer?
Right.
It's just like that.
So it's a real like play on the noir style of like the detective, and there's one story, but it's always really the same story. Mm-hmm. Okay, that sounds fun. And there were 10 episodes?
Yeah, and then towards the end of season one, you started to see that something wasn't sitting right with Tony when his wife was killed. She got run over by a hit and run.
Mm-hmm.
She was crossing the street or something, and she got dragged like 50 feet or something, and it wasn't sitting right with him. So now he was trying to find out whether or not there was foul play involved.
And did we find this out?
They were starting to, yeah, where he...
So it's going to be on... You're forever going to have to not know.
We're never going to know.
You could write Tony a letter. Dear Mr. Danza.
Bob Saget was in an episode.
Really?
Yeah.
The auteur, Bob Saget.
He played a Stephen Colbert type television host who killed his assistant.
I'm getting it.
And Tony Danza, he's like a crook. Like, you know, you could tell he's a good guy and he's got a good heart, but he's cuts corners and he's not really legitimate. And, you know, like he somehow bought a restaurant and it was two sets of books.
Mm-hmm.
You could tell he was that prototypical Italian from Brooklyn.
Criminal.
But still had a sense that, oh, I got to do the right thing.
Uh-huh. Okay. I get it. And Josh Groban,
like, there was an episode where we're talking about stock fraud and SEC trades. And, you know, there was at this restaurant that I owned, and there was the table. It was the chairman of the board's table. And there was a microphone from Sinatra when he sang at the Copa.
Uh-huh.
But then the maitre d', she was using some type of machinery to record conversations when bankers were coming and listened. And then her boyfriend was in the stocks, and they would steal all the ideas and put all this money, and they made millions.
Uh-huh.
I found out. And I had to kind of had to put the kibosh on it. I wasn't going to ask for a taste. My dream was to own a restaurant. I made the best artichokes in New York City. My veal scallopini was to die for.
Well, right now I'm reading a book of short stories called Resist, Stories from a Future Worth Fighting Against.
Mm.
And it is a book of science fiction short stories, and a big chunk of the proceeds go to the ACLU.
That's nice.
They're not stories about Trump or anything like that, but they're stories about now and what goes on now. And it's all the sort of big sci-fi and fantasy writers writing these stories, and it's a good sense of like, this is what's on our mind now.
Is there any story about rakes?
No rakes.
Oh.
No. So there's a really great story in it that is about a guy who he had his head frozen when he died because he wanted to come back in the future. So it begins with his head being woken up, and there's a lawyer there, and he's like, oh wow, I'm in the future, what goes on here? And the lawyer's like, all right, let me stop you. When you were alive, there was poverty, there was a lot of bad stuff with the environment, and you didn't really do anything. So you're actually on trial. And basically everyone who froze their heads, when they would get reanimated, they'd have to go on trial for having not done anything. And he goes on trial, they find him guilty, they put him in like a virtual hell for a couple hundred years, and then he wakes up again and it's 100 years later and it's like very like sort of peaceful hippie world. And they're like, we're so sorry that you were punished and put in hell. We don't think that way anymore. We no longer blame you for everything that happened to the environment. We're going to take the people who tried you and we're going to punish them. And then basically every couple hundred years he gets woken up and it's humanity's in a different place.
So he never really gets to experience humanity? They just freeze him again over and over again?
No, and he's just ahead. And he just gets woken up, and then in the very end he gets woken up. And they're like, you know, we don't really have the power to keep you going. And he's like, I'm fine. I'm ready to go. I've lived basically for over thousands of years, and I've seen every version of humanity, and we're good. It's very funny. And there's another story. In the future, there is an artificial intelligence that's created to be the economy. And the artificial intelligence, basically, it's kind of like it takes care of cryptocurrency, and it is highly complex, and it can think because it's looking for counterfeiting and things like that, and looking for anyone to break into its system. And this virus keeps breaking into a system, but the virus is very like sexy, and the virus is like a Marxist, and it's like, hey, you know, listen, hey, you don't have to tell on me. I just want to talk to you about wealth. And little by little, he keeps letting it in. And in the end, spoiler alert for the story, in the end, he gets corrupted and he lets in the AI of the Marxist. And the story ends by him distributing all wealth equally across the globe. And it's fun stuff like that.
How many writers?
Oh, it's like something like 40-something. And it's all like people who are good writers right now. The story I told you about the AI, that's from Charlie Jane Anders, who's a sci-fi writer I really like. Some stories are more serious. Some stories are more funny and ironic. The whole book is like 400 pages, but they're short little stories that are like, they're my favorite kind of short story where it's like a nice little bite. You know what I mean? Like I love a short story collection. You know, like sometimes when an author puts out a short story book, it's all from the same author and it's, you don't get a different array of things. This is like a really fun, if you're feeling like, you know, if you're feeling excited by the blue wave, or if you're feeling like, oh, God, I wish things were better, this is a really fun book for right now. And if you like sci-fi, it's a really fun book.
I dig it, man.
Yeah, it's really awesome.
I dig it. I like it.
I've got to go to the bathroom.
Let's take a break. Everything's Archie. Archie's here. Eddie's here. Veronica, too. Reggie's here. Where are you? We want to dance and we want to sing. Have some fun and go adventuring. All our friends are here, but it ain't complete. We ain't the Archies without the Jughead Bee. Whoa, Archie's here. Betty's here. Veronica too. Reggie's here. And here comes Jughead and Hot Dog too. So everything's Archie. Come on, let's go with the Archie Show. Welcome back to PCMC. I'm Mike Bongiorno.
I'm Emilio Sparks. You know what? All episode you've been riding my ass about not having fun.
Yeah.
I'm going to show you that I can have fun.
What do you got there? Hershey's?
I'm going to eat a piece of candy.
Good for you.
I'm going to show you that I can be fun.
Sure. This is good radio. Oh, it looks like Santa Claus.
Mm-hmm.
Now, is it just pure chocolate?
Okay.
No filling?
No filling.
Okay, well, good for you.
How does this make you feel?
I'd like a little filling. I'd like you to really cut loose with it, but, you know,
look
a nice...
how much fun I'm having.
You don't look like you're having any fun. You look like...
Wow.
Enjoying that sugar is not enjoyable for you.
Wow.
But where'd you get that candy?
My mother has them.
Okay.
So I was like, Mom, Mike Bongiorno says I don't know how to have fun.
You're chewing on it.
Let me get a piece of chocolate.
You should really like let it melt a little bit. You're chewing on it like it's a goddamn chore.
This is 170 calories.
Okay.
This annoys me.
I'm sorry
that... Is this supposed to sit in my mouth like a communion wafer and dissolve?
I mean, that's the way you're supposed to enjoy chocolate. Maybe food's not your thing.
I'm really not a foodie, dude. This is all right. It's not great. I've had more of a thrill drinking my chlorophyll.
Is that right?
Mm-hmm. Because it's something I'm into.
Well, God, you seem fun. What?
I used to love Hershey's bars.
And then,
I don't know. Now I just, I don't do it. There you go. I had a little fun with you.
That was sad, actually. I feel bummed out having watched that. Nothing about that was fun.
You didn't see the look of joy on my face?
You made Candy seem sad.
What happens?
Boy, who hurt you? What happened?
We don't have enough hours in this program
today.
What
happened to you?
But we're back. For more information on who we are and what we do, hit up the Instagram at Pop Culture Man Children. I am Emilio Sparks. I'm joined by Michael Caruso Buongiorno.
And we will take endorsements from any candy company, so
why don't you tell Beans and Sprouts or whatever it's called?
Beans and Leaves, because they're coffee and tea joint. You get it? Beans,
why don't we do an episode from there?
I'll do an episode from there. There was just an episode of Madam Secretary that had a scene in there.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. I don't watch Madam Secretary, but somebody told me about it.
Did you try to find the episode?
No, I'm fine.
You're like, oh, my God, I sit right over there.
I literally, my first question was, am I in it?
Maybe you were.
No, I don't remember.
Are you sure?
Who plays Madam Secretary?
How the fuck do I know?
I want to see Sigourney Weaver, but that's not right. Wasn't she? No, not Sigourney Weaver. Fucking, oh, who cares? Let's talk about obsessions. My obsession, all right, to be 100% honest with you, this is not my current obsession. My current obsession is what we're talking about next week's minisode.
Mm.
But this is my obsession from like 2-3 weeks ago. Chilling Adventures of Sabrina on Netflix.
That the original Sabrina cast co-signed.
Well, at first they were talking all sorts of shit. They were like, we don't think it needs to be dark. What's wrong with being family friendly and blah, blah, blah. And then fucking Melissa Joan Hart's like, come see my crazy Christian movies.
I want to talk to her about wrestling because she's a wrestling fan. And some of her just hot takes are just so fucking off.
Really?
Yeah.
Did she bring Jesus into it?
No, she's never brought Jesus into pro wrestling, but I love her passion for pro wrestling as a fan.
Okay.
But some of the stuff, it's just like, girl.
But Emilio doesn't explain it all.
Clarissa did, though.
Clarissa explains it all.
Hi, Sam.
Na, wow, na, wow. Na, na.
Oh, we're doing that. Na, 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 na.
So the first they were talking shit about it, and then when it came out, Netflix did an interesting promo where they had the
stuck
original,
it right up their ass.
Yeah, they had the original cast sit down and watch it, and they were, I don't know, they made funny things about it. I don't know. I never watched the original, did you?
Maybe of Sabrina the Teenage Witch? A few episodes.
I may have seen one ever.
It wasn't my weekly, oh, I have to sit and watch this.
I was not into it.
I was never a big Melissa Joan Hart guy.
I liked Clarissa. I even saw the pilot for the Clarissa spinoff that never happened, where she's a reporter at a newspaper and her boss is famous comedian Robert Klein.
I'm good. I didn't like, I guess, you know what aggravated me? The whole late 90s, early 2000s culture with the way like the guys dressed and the girls dressed with the clunky shoes and the belly shirts. And
you don't like a guy with long hair and a flannel and tied around his waist?
Well, no, that was early 90s. I'm talking about late 90s where it was more like, you know, rib sweaters and thumb rings and Dutch boy haircuts with the part going down with the fake blonde streaks.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I can understand that. I think that was a TGIF show, original.
Yeah, and the girls were wearing clunky open-toed shoes and belly shirts and bell-bottoms.
Well, there's none of that. In the new show, it's all like 60s styles. It takes place now, but it's based on a comic book, The Chilling Adventures of Sabrina, where in the comic book it's the 60s. But they took that 60s aesthetic, so like the way she dresses, the way they all dress, the way the house looks. It's a beautiful-looking show.
Is she a witch?
She absolutely is a witch. Okay. That's why it's the Chilling Adventures.
Well, maybe Sabrina just got into some shit.
Well, it's super like witch power, girl power. The beginning of the show is Sabrina's turning 16. And when you turn 16, you have to sign the Book of Satan and give your soul over to Satan. And she is half witch because her father was a witch and her mother was a normal human. And she likes her double identity. She likes being part witch, part human. So she doesn't want to sign the book. She feels like she owns her soul. She doesn't have to give her soul to anybody. In like the second episode, she has the big ceremony and she runs away and she's like, I don't want to do it. I'm happy just being half a witch. Basically, the little coven that she lives in, which is kind of like a congregation, is like 100 of them. They don't like her. They think she's a rebel rouser. They think, who does she think she is? She goes to a human school. You know what it has? It has a real Buffy vibe. It's fun. It's a little bit funny. It's not as funny as Buffy, but it's got that like teen drama, but there's also like monsters running around things. The best character is Miss Woodward, who's played by Michelle Gomez, who played Missy on Doctor Who.
Okay.
Who, she's amazing. She's a Scottish actress. She does an American accent on the show. And she is basically a secret agent. She pretends to be a normal witch who's like helping Sabrina, but she's really working for the devil. And she's trying to get Sabrina to sign the book. They haven't gotten into this yet, but they've implied that Sabrina is like very powerful and she doesn't know it yet. So the devil really wants her to give her his soul. So her whole thing in season one is like trying to set up. She's acting like a mentor, but she's really like bringing her down the path to ruination. A lot of people liked it. Of course, some liberal people were like, it's not liberal enough. Because there's one scene where the bully boys in school, Sabrina and her witch friends, the weird sisters, like from Macbeth, they trick the boy. The boys think that they're making out with the girls, but then they're really making out with each other. And they take pictures of them and say, we'll send these around school if you keep picking on us. And some people are like, well, that's homophobic. And it's like, yeah, but also like Sabrina's super like a feminist. There's a character in the show that's gender nonconforming. And it's like, tell me another show that has a gender nonconforming character. You have mainstream media, which is like barely gives crumbs to anybody. And then you'll have a show that like has like good representation. It's got a good head on its shoulder. It's feminist. The show's all about down with the patriarchy. But if it's not 100% perfect, let's throw the whole thing in the garbage.
Yeah, well, that's how it goes.
Thing in the garbage.
That's how it goes, man. You know that.
It sucks. It's like, yeah, okay, is that homophobic? Yeah, that's not great. But like every fucking episode of a Chuck Lorre produced show is homophobic. Go pick on that. Sabrina's at least trying something. Some people are upset that Salem the cat does not speak in it.
Oh, give me a fucking break.
He's not there quipping around.
Does the show have any comic relief?
Yeah, the ants are kind of funny. The ants are kind of funny.
Yeah, but to...
But there's no, like, wisecracking fucking Groucho Marx...
Cat?
Cat. Okay. Who's a shitty puppet that okay. can't move, barely. He's her familiar. He... When we first meet him, she, like, she puts out a thing in the universe, a spell out to, like, find a familiar.
Yeah.
And... we see like a demon like come to her and like it's talking to her and it's hiding behind a door and then it turns into a cat and then after that he never speaks again.
Oh God.
But even that's liberal because she says to her aunts like he's not my servant. He's me and him take care of each other. We've got an equal partnership. Because the idea of a familiar is like Renfield to Dracula. A familiar is someone, a magical person, basically hypnotizes to make their slave.
So is it, hey, let's just bitch to bitch about something. When something's really good, let's just nitpick the one thing that we probably have an issue with.
Let's write articles online about, like, we need to talk about the scene. And you know what I mean? Like, those types of articles.
Give me a fucking break.
Some people say, well, why do we need to accept baby steps? It's like... You don't need to accept anything, but the media has got such a far way to go.
Yeah.
Can't we just appreciate a baby step?
No, because they want everything now.
It's in the Riverdale-iverse, and as you know, I only watched 10 minutes of Riverdale, and then... It was either kill myself or turn off the show, so I turned off the show.
Yeah.
But it's barely. Like, there's one scene where they're like, hey, my cousin goes to Riverdale High. Like, that's it.
Oh, good.
But it's the same producers and... So far, nobody has crossed over in any way.
Oh, good. Riverdale-verse?
The Riverdale-verse.
There's no fucking Jughead?
No Jughead, not yet. You know in Riverdale,
what?
Josie the Pussycats are in Riverdale? And I believe Josie is a gay woman? Gasp. Because Josie Pussycats are part of the Archie-verse.
Oh, that's right.
In the comics. Right. You don't think of that because the cartoon's Hanna-Barbera.
Yeah.
But they're part of the Archie. By the way, let me ask you a question. Did you ever read Archie comics?
No.
Neither did I. And no. They're getting like popular again because of Riverdale and stuff. And I'm like,
are you going to collect some old Archie comics?
No, but I'm interested in reading some because I kind of want to get it. Like, what? Like, what's the point? Like,
that two women were vying for the affection of Archie?
Is it supposed to be funny? Is it supposed to be cute?
I don't know. I guess it was.
Is it drama?
I don't know. It was a comic book set in like what, the fucking 50s?
Yeah.
See, I think those are the ones you have to read. I think you have to get an anthology.
But now there's like the new cool Archie.
Yeah, because that's what's selling. But the show is optioned because of fucking Archie and Riverdale High from the 50s. They were just like, yo, let's just give it a dark and edgy tone.
You ever see the episode of The Simpsons where you see a car pull up and it's Jughead and Archie and they throw Homer out and they go, stay out of Riverdale. Oh my god. Yeah,
you know what we should do?
Yeah.
We should watch Riverdale and then maybe do a live podcast.
I would much
about
rather
it.
Read a comic than try to watch Riverdale.
Because I just want to know what the hype is. We're not 14-year-old children.
I think the hype is it's like making a reference to when we were that age, like Dawson's Creek and shit like that.
I never
I think
watched
it's like that.
When we
you
were
never
kids.
Watched Dawson's Creek?
No.
The fuck were you doing?
I was
eating chocolate, watching Dawson's Creek, loving life, eating Hot Pockets.
No, I had a Hot Pocket maybe 3 times.
When I was in junior high.
I was never really into processed food.
Oh, go fuck yourself. How about that?
I was this woke
for your
back
high
then.
Road.
I was
so yeah. All right. All right. Well, a snort, a genuine snort out of him.
See, look, I'm having fun.
You can watch Riverdale and get back to me. Tell me what it's.
I think I'm going to do that. I think I'm going to go into the rabbit hole just for the show.
Yeah. But
for purposes of BCFZ.
I want to read the Sabrina, the chilling Sabrina comics because they're supposed to be even darker than the Netflix show.
So then why don't you do both? Why don't you pull up to your favorite comic book provider and be like, this is what I want.
I was
give me all the Jughead.
I was at GHU the other day and they were like, oh, we're I was like, where's the Sabrina at?
And sold out.
And they were like, you're 35-year-old man. You're upsetting everybody and you're creeping out. Please.
Will the 35-year-old man please step away from the Sabrina aisle? You're upsetting all the children and adolescent girls.
And I was like, no, guys, look, my sneaker, my tongue's out. I'm cool and young. Look at me. Come on.
I'm hip.
I wear my sneakers just like Jughead.
We got to get you a Jughead hat.
No. Well, in the he doesn't wear a crown in Riverdale. He wears like a snow cap that kind of like is a reference to
yeah,
the crown.
That's what we got to get you. We got to get you a Jughead winter snow cap.
No, I want a straight up
crown,
like Burger King crown.
I mean, listen,
like, but like slightly, you know.
See, that's why I fuck with Jughead.
Is that right?
Because any guy that could walk around with just zero fucks given to wear a crown, yeah, you got to rock with that guy. Like, I was looking at the Archie Wikipedia since we're in this weird Sabrina Archie universe.
Yeah,
and there was one piece that just says the death of Archie.
Oh no!
72 years after the character's first appearance in April 2014, Archie Comics wow. announced that the adult Archie would be killed in the July 2014 issue, number 36.
Well, only 4 years ago.
Life with Archie. Archie dies when he's shot in the stomach while
what?
Saving his friend Senator Kevin Keller. The story was written so as to terminate both storylines without committing to which girl Archie married and contains several flashbacks to Little Archie days. The final issue, number 37, is set 1 year after Archie's death. All his friends are memorializing him, and Riverdale High is officially renamed the Archie Andrews High School in his honor. The story ends with Jughead, the owner of a malt shop, serving a sundae to three children who resemble Little Archie, Betty, and Veronica.
And they never brought him back?
It's not like the death of Superman, dude. He's not like we're not getting four different Archies.
He's been a zombie. He's been – there's been a lot of weird shit.
Do you think
with,
Archie has just as much significance as Superman?
No, but I'm saying they play with Archie the way they play with other – just because he's not a superhero doesn't mean that he couldn't come back.
And they never said who he was married to or who he dated.
I have no idea. Oh, I had no idea that he was an adult in these comics.
Like, so is there like a weird love triangle between Betty and Veronica?
Is that the whole thing? Is that the whole point of Archie?
Do we have any Archie experts who listen to this show?
If you're an Archie reader or even a Riverdale watcher, please write in, tweet at Emilio. For someone who's never read any Archie, let's say I want to get into it, right? What should I start with?
1941.
No.
And
no.
Work your way up till now.
Hell no. Give me a good trade, a nice collection to start with. And then maybe if I like that, we'll go other places.
Oh, you'll go there? You'll dig deep into the Archie hole?
Maybe.
Did you get the Sabrina comic books?
No, they didn't have them.
So we got to get you them, too.
I'm going to get them.
All right. All right. So you enjoyed it?
I enjoyed it very much. Oh, there's going to be a Christmas special.
The Sabrina Christmas episode?
Yeah, it's coming up soon.
All right.
Netflix.
They're killing it. They just get rid of the good cop, but they're giving us a Sabrina Christmas episode.
Maybe there'll be a good cop St. Anthony's Day. Is there a St. Anthony's Day?
It probably is.
Probably. All right.
There's an All Saints Day.
What are you obsessed with?
I actually texted it to you once about 6 o'clock in the morning. I don't know if you remember my excitement for Randy Santel.
I remember.
I'm like, Mike, you have to watch this.
He's a competitive
eater.
Eater.
Yeah.
Now,
he travels around the world entering food challenges.
Why are you obsessed with this?
When it comes down to it, I'm amazed at the gluttony.
Yeah.
In this.
So then it's like watching a train wreck.
Yeah. But he's incredible.
You're not like an admirer of his work.
No, I can't sit here and say, wow, I want to do this.
How many videos have you watched?
A lot.
What's the thing he – what's the craziest thing he ate that really surprised you?
Well, it was the most – to me, it was the most impressive thing. He ate 17 quarter pounder, but they were all stuck together on like a skew. And they were like big patties of like
– so it was hamburgers.
It was hamburgers, but they were thick hamburgers. I think they were like a quarter pounder of meat, but it was a food challenge. I think he was in Australia. But so everything was all fresh ground. It wasn't like McDonald's or nothing. I'm just saying quarter pounders just to show you how much meat is actually on.
How much bread was there though? Just one
just
bun?
Top and bottom.
So
it's
but 17 what do you win?
In a t-shirt and you get your refund. So if you go in and say, hey, I want to eat the beans and leaves food challenge. All right, Mike, it's going to be $50 if you win. We give you back your money, you get your picture on the wall of fame, and you get a t-shirt.
I bet it would be hard, but I bet I could eat 10 of those waffles.
You think you can do 10 of the beans and leaves waffles?
I think I could do 10.
That's a big challenge.
I think I could do 10.
I know you almost 20 years. I haven't seen you eat a meal in 6 years.
Well, it's because we can't really go out to eat together because I'll say, hey, Amelia, you want to go hang out, go to a diner? And you go, no, but I'm going to go to a local farm and chew on some fucking...
I've been known to go to an organic farm and get some organic Brussels sprouts.
Yeah,
and
I'm like, no, not going to do that.
Okay, that's what I like. That's what I like.
So all right. What do you think you like? What would
Mike? He crushes these things.
What kind of challenge could you do though?
I don't know, but Mike, all I know is he crushes.
But what kind
these
of a man are you?
In record time. This has nothing to do with masculinity.
What kind of man doesn't know how much food they can take?
I've never sat down and go, boy, you know what?
How many burgers do you think you could eat?
Meat?
Yeah.
Maybe two in a row. I could probably do two.
Mm-hmm.
Three's pushing it. Three's really pushing it.
But these people who do it, they do it
record
very fast.
Time. Record time.
And they have ways of doing it. Like they have the water and they sometimes they soak things.
No, he's not soaking anything.
That's how the hot dog people do
it. Yeah. This is a bit different. This dude is legitimately, like he eats like a machine.
Yeah.
Like the way he is, he doesn't take these.
I saw one where he did pizza and like he does a pizza in three bites. Just.
Yeah. But then like I noticed when he eats a lot more like meat stuff.
Yeah.
It's smaller bites, but they're so fast.
Mm.
Like, I'm like...
Because a lot of these challenges are also time challenges.
Yeah. Oh, you have an hour. You have 30 minutes. You have 15. He did an hour challenge in 10 minutes.
It was an entire bowl of ramen the size of a plant pot.
Okay.
And it had everything that you can possibly imagine thrown in this bowl.
There was eggs.
There was pork. There was healthy vegetables, as he likes to call them.
Yeah. I saw the one with pizza, and he was like, I'm going to put green peppers on it because it's healthy. Okay.
Like, now, there's been videos where he's failed food challenges.
Is that right?
Yeah. Do you want to watch one where he fails, or do you want to watch one that he wins?
I don't want to watch any.
Very, very excited. I'm going for my first win in the state of New Jersey, and I'm also going for win number 196 today. I'm on my quest for 200. I am in Hopatcom, New Jersey, at Sobretti's. I was making sure I said that right. At Sobretti's Hot Dogs, I'm taking on their hot dog record challenge. Now, there's actually two parts to this.
I bet if you own a restaurant and this guy walks in with his camera, you're like, fuck me.
They've got 30 hot dogs on their menu. Now, the record is that somebody a while back ate their first 19 hot dogs in order in less than 30 minutes. Now, to beat the challenge, all I've got to do is eat the first 20 hot dogs that I think is really the challenge here. In less than 30 minutes.
20 hot dogs is crazy, but
nobody's done it. If I can eat all 30 of their hot dogs, the winner of that challenge gets a $1,000 gift certificate to the restaurant. But because obviously I live in Missouri, we're going to be taking that $1,000 gift certificate and donating it to one or more charities around the area.
What a sweetheart.
So we're going for that. It's been over a day since I've eaten. I want to get this thing done so we can get all that food donated.
He hasn't eaten in a day.
We've got
quite
a few people in here watching. Let's get it started.
Does the sign of the cross before he goes in. Turns his hat backwards.
All right, music's ready, and during that, I also found out that if I eat all 30, another incentive is that
over the top.
I'll get to name any one of those 30 hot dogs. We've got to do them in order, so I'm going to be starting with 1, 2, and then like a book, left to right. So let's get it started. Do you guys want to do a countdown?
Yeah, let's do a countdown from 10. 10,
9, 8, 7, 6, 5. 4, 3, 2, 1, go.
Let's go, Randy!
Come on, man.
All right, Randy is chowing down.
The weird, like he opens his mouth, he sort of descends his jaw like a snake, and then shoves it in, and like it's happening so fast, like you can't enjoy that.
No, there's no way you're enjoying any of this. This is just, let me force this food down. Dude, in 54 seconds, he's almost eaten an entire tray of hot dogs.
And you know what's funny? With these videos, they make it a montage and they cut ahead and they play music. But if you were there live watching it, you'd probably, after a minute, be like, this is kind of boring and gross.
I can't sit there and watch this. But he's legitimately housing hot dogs. He ate the first 8 off the menu already.
In 3 minutes.
Yeah. And now he's doing 4 at a time.
Oh, that's disgusting.
What is it?
It's a Hershey's dog. It's a hot dog with chocolate sauce on it. Why would you eat that?
Because it's part of the food challenge. And they just keep on coming out.
I love he eats all this food and then, like, what he wins is more food.
Yeah. Or a t-shirt.
Yeah.
Like, hey, your cholesterol just spiked. And the insulin levels in your liver just went insane. God. He did all 20.
Wow.
In 13 minutes. Now he's trying to do the record for 30 hot dogs to get the donation, the $1,000 gift certificate, so he can donate it to charity.
Oh, a wasabi dog. That's going to fuck him up. He's got 5 left?
Yeah. Look, his nose is bleeding.
Holy Jesus.
Of course, you eat that many hot dogs, your body's going to start to fucking hate you.
Who knows what's in one hot dog?
Nitrate.
Rat.
Oh, man. No, I bet you this food challenge in New Jersey uses only the finest ingredients.
If he died right now, he'd die.
Look, his nose is bleeding.
Is that the wasabi that did that?
Yeah. Is that like drowning, you think? He's trying to like chew and breathe at the same time?
But how does that make your nose bleed? Holy Jesus.
Maybe that's his weakness.
This is the best part when he's like towards the end and he's like pacing around.
And he's suffering. Now the crowd of 6 is rallying behind him.
And he brought 4 of those people.
Yeah. He has the last hot dog. If he finishes this, he wins.
And he's got, 2.5 minutes?
Yeah. Oh, he wants to drink a Yoo-hoo while eating the last hot dog.
Why?
Are you fucking kidding me? Oh.
Why does he keep drinking?
Because you have to get it down.
Dude, he's eating 29
hot dogs.
He's got
like two bites left.
He's eating 29 hot dogs. This is just the last one. But why is he drinking the Yoo-Hoo for? What does that make you want
to
throw up?
I'm saying the liquid looks to be like the thing that's making him want to throw up. Just take that last bite. He's got 30 seconds left.
Boo!
Ooh. It goes black and white as he fucking pukes. Wow, he got so close. One hot dog in 30 seconds left, and he fucked it up.
Yeah, he ate 29.
That, I mean, it's basically a minute a dog.
Look at him. He's a fucking loser. He's defeated.
Oh, come on.
He's embarrassed. Look at him. He's embarrassed.
Well, this is an amazing obsession.
He's embarrassed.
Well, Emilio.
Mike.
I think we did it.
That's a good way to end, right?
Yeah.
All right.
I'm hungry now.
Yeah. Off to beans and leaves you go.
You know where Pop Culture Man Children is. You know where we live. We live on the internet with all the good podcasts.
We're followed on the Big Four.
Yeah. We're out there.
We're doing something.
Emilio's at Emilio Sparks on Instagram and at Pop Culture Man Children on Instagram.
That's it.
Let's go bye-bye. Excelsior!
Bye-bye!